This is Radical Love Live, an ongoing series of podcasts and special events where we explore faith outside the boxes. Hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Kel.
How are you today?
I'm freaking awesome, as always.
All right. That's very good to hear.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good.
Yeah.
We had a little earthquake this morning.
We did, didn't we?
In New Jersey.
4.8,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I kind of missed. I was standing at the top of the stairs and one of our cats went running down the stairs, like spooked by something. And he's kind of, he eats a lot. This cat.
He's a big boy.
He's a little bit of a chonk. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So he's running down the stairs. So I heard this like thump, 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 thump. And in that flurry, I missed it. Then I went downstairs.
Aww.
And my wife was like, "Hey, did you know we just had an earthquake?"
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, I was at home when it happened and started the rumbling. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching, you know, my monitors and my lamp on my desk shake a little bit. But I thought, okay, I've been through this before. It's not my first time, you know, experiencing it. And I'm thinking, okay, if it gets any worse, so where do I go? How do I get out of here? Thankfully, there's a fire escape right by the window I'm sitting mm-hmm. in. So I was like, well, I could go this route. But by the time I was even motivated to ponder that, I was like, oh, it was over. And it's like, oh, okay.
Well, yeah.
We just had a little tremor, didn't we?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. The only thing, you know, I was on social media this morning and there's been so much of a flurry of activity around this eclipse that's happening in a couple of days.
And then,
you know, people are starting to add it up, like eclipses and earthquakes and
the tsunamis.
A little bit. Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. indeed. So mm-hmm. a little bit of eschatological fervor.
Mm.
Mm. I just try to remember. I'm ready at any point. You know, I almost slipped in the shower this morning. Like that could have been the end of the world for me. So, you know, you just got.
And here we are. Oh my goodness. So Kelly, what are we doing today? What are we talking about?
We are talking with our friend, Mason Meninga. I'm looking at his website right now. He's an aspiring theologian, podcaster, YouTuber, and the internet's youth pastor, as he describes himself. I love following Mason on the platform formerly known as Twitter. He is hilarious and also puts up with a lot of people who try to straighten him out and tell him that he's not right. But anyway, he's got some great theological ideas and he's a really interesting thinker and also comments on music and pop culture. And we're really glad to have him here today. So Mason, thank you for being here. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat.
Looking forward to this conversation, Mason. So Kelly, what kind of questions do you have for our friend?
Well, you know, often,
oh,
you know,
yeah, go ahead.
When we have guests on, we start with just talking about like, what's your spiritual background? You know, how did you get sort of from there to here? You know, that's usually where we kick things off.
Yeah. Yeah. So I grew up in what I think of as sort of the prototypical American evangelical kind of family. I grew up going to church every Sunday, and then eventually going to youth group. My first music I ever remember singing along to was VeggieTales. Spent a lot of time learning all the lyrics of all the VeggieTales and all the silly songs with Larry. And, just kind of grew up in, you know, going to church every single Sunday, and then eventually going to youth group on Wednesdays when I was a teenager and mm-hmm. really got into John Piper during that time.
I loved
John Piper. Obviously listened to all the Christian music, all the popular fun Christian music like Switchfoot and Reliant K and all the heavy mm-hmm. stuff that I still listen to this day. And so, yeah, I grew up, again, just prototypical American evangelicalism in South Dakota. And so it wasn't just like religiously very evangelical, but just also very politically evangelical. You know, I remember starting to get interested in politics when I was in middle school and high school, and that was when Obama was elected, so obviously the end of the world was happening.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in that world and that kind of environment, and towards the end of high school I was starting to have some questions and doubts about my faith. I still would have been very much like theologically conservative, But mm-hmm. politically, I was starting to like have some questions about the nature of my faith and its in politics. So for example, I remember around, 2009, 2010, 2011, a lot of states were starting to have gay marriage. They were starting mm-hmm. to legalize gay marriage. And I remember thinking to myself, again, even as like a very conservative evangelical teenager, I was thinking to myself, gay people are going to hell, but who am I to say that they can't get married? And so I started having thoughts and doubts about my faith like
that. Which in America is oddly, oddly liberal.
Yeah.
Right.
They're going to go to hell and get married.
Okay. Yeah. So I kind of had a, a little bit of this kind of libertarian phase where I'm like, I don't think that the state should be involved in this kind of arrangement, but they're still going to hell. So I started having those kind of thoughts when I was probably like a junior or senior in high school. And certainly I started having some frustrations around purity culture. I was a teenage boy with hormones going through my body. And so purity culture wasn't particularly pleasant. And so I started having some frustrations about that and, trying to figure out the Bible really say that you can't like kiss before your wedding and that kind of stuff. And so I started to just have some like very basic doubts and about my faith. But at the time I didn't think that anybody else had the same kind of questions that I had about my faith. And mm-hmm. so I, growing up in that kind of environment, I really was truly insulated from anything that was like liberal or progressive. I truly had no idea that there were Christians out there that had doubts and questions about their faith like that I was having. And so I went to a very conservative Christian college in Iowa, partly because I could be a youth ministry major. I wanted to be a youth minister, and mm-hmm. partly because I was wanting to play football, and they offered me a scholarship to play football. So I was like, all right, perfect. Well, I'll just go to this college then. So I went to this very conservative college in Iowa, and I still remember my first class in college was this youth ministry class. Mm-hmm. And we were supposed to read this book called Postmodern Youth Ministry. And I remember thinking to myself, I don't know what the word postmodern means, but I know I'm not supposed to like that word. And so I was really confused by the fact that this book title was literally called Postmodern Youth Ministry. I wasn't supposed to like postmodernism. So I was really confused by the fact that it was connected to youth ministry, something I did love and I wanted to become. And so I was really confused, but because it was a book that I was supposed to read for college, I was like, well, I'll just read it anyway. So I started reading it and I realized really quickly, oh, wow, the kind of questions and doubts that I've been having about my faith for the last couple of years, literally this author's talking about these very kind of questions and doubts.
And I'm looking it up. Tony Jones, isn't it?
Yeah. So Tony was like asking a lot of the same kind of questions that I had been asking, questions around human sexuality, questions around politics and faith. And so, I read that book and I was like, oh, wait, there's one other Christian in the world that has these kind of questions and doubts about their faith. And so just being really curious about Tony and the book, I literally Googled Tony's name, and on like the Google related search bar or whatever, there was like five other people. It was like Rob Bell and Nadia Boltz-Weber and Brian McLaren, and there's all these other names.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just started reading those people and started following them on social media, and then very quickly I realized, oh, it's not just five other people that have these same kind of questions and doubts about their faith. There's thousands and thousands of people like this. And so that's when I started realizing, oh, there's different kinds of Christianity out here. And so I kind of got sucked into that kind of Christianity and realized, oh, wow, like I can still be a Christian and still question the kind of things that I had been questioning and doubting the kind of things that I've been doubting. So that really was kind of the gateway to my evolution in my faith. And, I continued to be a youth ministry major. I still loved Christianity. I still wanted to be a part of Christianity, even though I did not want to be a part of the kind of Christianity I'd grown up in.
Right.
So I still remained a youth minister, got connected to this progressive church in Minneapolis. And so moved to Minneapolis after I graduated and started seminary during that time. And that really expanded my faith even more, learning all these different types of theologies when I was in seminary. And here I am now.
Wow.
Oh, so quick question for you. When you were in this discovery phase, you were in college, right?
Yep.
Working on this major. Did you tell anybody else that you were doing this, or was this kind of like down on the down low?
Yeah. So yes and no. There were people that certainly knew about kind of the questions and doubts that I had been having, and certainly knew the kind of people that I was reading. some of those people were my professors. Even though the college itself was very much like a conservative evangelical school, the religion professors were, I mean, some of them were conservative, but they were scholars at the end of the day. So they were people that wanted you to examine your faith and really, you know, wanted you to at least expand your horizons and how you thought about the Bible or theology, even if they themselves were conservative. And so that kind of way of engaging my faith was brand new to me. And so they, even though they theologically and politically were probably very different than someone like Brian McLaren, they encouraged me to explore my faith deeper. And so even though that they were different politically and theologically than someone like Brian McLaren, they really were encouraging me to explore that more. So they knew about it. I started to bring up these kind of questions and doubts when I would go home to my family during college, you know, like during summer breaks or whatever. And I quickly realized, oh, these questions and doubts are not welcomed. And so I tried my best to not really convert my parents, but at least like make them kind of question in the way that I was questioning. And I just realized that they were not in a place for that at all and still aren't. So that we quickly realized we really can't talk about these kind of things. And we really haven't since then. So, yeah. So there were people that definitely knew the kind of people I was reading. There were certainly people that knew or did not want to know the kind of people that I was reading at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's probably a quick lesson out of that. And as you were just talking about with your folks, and I've learned this lesson myself, some people are just not going to change. But then that doesn't mean that I'm going to draw up my armor around them and block myself away from them. But instead, you still lean in on the love. You just realize that you're not going to be able to have certain conversations as such.
Yeah.
But in the meantime,
I've accepted that it is not my job to change them. Fundamentally believe that is the job of the Holy Spirit. You know, nobody tried to change me in my faith. I just had this kind of what I would describe as like the Spirit moving in me. And then I ended up finding all these different kinds of Christians and, you know, the Spirit leads me in the way that the Spirit's going to lead me. And I end up obviously changing. But my job is not to change them, but my job is to love them and to tell them or for me to speak what I believe to be true. If I do those two things, maybe the Spirit will lead them in the way that I hope the Spirit does. But it's not my job to change them. All my job is to do is love them and tell them what I believe to be true.
There you are.
Yeah, one of the things that I've run into, and I wish that I were wise enough to stay out of some of those conversations, because sometimes at, you know, Thanksgiving, I actually end up really kind of embroiled in it. We like to talk about theology in my family. But I think for me, because I went through a similar type of transformation, is assuring others that I'm okay. That, you know, that in some evangelical settings, they're like, well, yeah, I know you're kind of a Christian, but are you really, you know, and there's, you know, and hear like the crackling of the hellfire in the background, but, you know, as people are, you know, worried about the state of my soul. And I have to be like, well, when I was talking to Jesus about it this morning, we didn't seem to have a problem. So,
Yeah, that was something I definitely had to navigate as well, was especially to my parents that, no, I'm like, okay, because in their minds, like if you become liberal, it's not just that you're going to hell, but like you're going to live a life of, you know, promiscuity, and you're going to become like going on welfare. And, you know, just like they literally think that that is what the life of a liberal is like. And I think they became more confident in the fact that, like, okay, even though my faith is changing and I'm changing a lot of ways, I'm still going to be like a decent human being in the world.
Right.
And so, you know, I still, like, I graduated as a religion major, youth ministry major. I ended up working at a church. I went to seminary. Like, I was doing all the things that they thought would end up leading me out of the faith, but I ended up leaning more into things. And I think even though they thought and they probably still think that the kind of Christianity I'm in is heretical and that I'm going to hell, like at least they think, all right, well, you've got a job, you've got benefits, you've been educated, like I have a decent life. So, you know, all the things that they might have been worried about, I think they're probably a little less worried about now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. So let's talk a little bit about, and fast forward here a bit, and I'm absolutely fascinated with the work you're doing. And you, when did you feel this urge to get out there in the podcast world and start speaking your truths from that and putting yourself out there that way?
Yeah, a lot of it started towards the end of college. I still distinctly remember, you know, being in my college bunk in my dorm room and thinking to myself, you know, these folks like Brian McLaren and Rachel Held Evans and Nadia Biltweber, they've been so important in my life the last couple of years. And even though they don't know me, they truly have changed my life. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I kind of have this inclination, you know, I feel like the spirit's moving within me to maybe do something like that in other people's lives. Mm-hmm. I didn't know at the time what that would look like, but I just kind of got the sense of, you know, what Rachel Held Evans had been for me, I want to be like that for others. Mm-hmm. And so once I graduated college and moved to Minneapolis and started working at a church, you know, I started exploring, you know, what would it look like to sort of broaden my the kind of people I reach beyond just like the youth group kids that I'm working with or, you know, the people at my church. What would it look like for me to broaden that reach? And, you know, at the time, I just was like 23 years old, 22 years old, something like that. And was like, I'm just going to start a podcast. That seems like an easy thing. All I need to do is put a microphone in front of my face and press record. Like, that seems easy enough. And so I started this podcast, and around that time, I was starting to meet all these different, you know, cool Christians, you know, people, some of the people I'd read, like Dinah Butler Bass and others. Okay. And so I was like, oh, I can at least get them on the podcast and we can just chat about the things that they want, you know, care about. And right. So that was kind of the first little impetus was, you know, I really wanted to reach be the kind of Rachel Held Evans in other people's lives that Rachel had been in my life. And so that was kind of the motivation for me. And yeah, that's how it kind of all started, was just putting a podcast mic in front of my mouth and started chatting with others.
I love it. So did you feel like it was a ministry early on?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, I still feel like a lot of the work I do is a kind of ministry. You know, I'm able to share what I believe to be the good news of Jesus Christ. And we talk about theology and we talk about politics, you know, a lot of the things that, you know, happen in ministries and churches, right? I think a lot of that is happening. It just so happens that it's not in one physical space, you know, it's happening in a digital space. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think in a lot of ways, I think of the work I do as sort of like a public theology or a public ministry, because, you know, it's putting people in community, it's connecting people. And we're talking about what we believe to be the good news of Jesus. And we're talking about theology and we're talking about politics and all the things that we care about in the world. And so, yeah, I think in a way it's kind of like ministry because that happens in ministry as well, you know, in actual church spaces.
It does. Kelly and I were recently at an event called God After Deconstruction. It was
good folks like Tripp and Tom.
Absolutely. And Tom Warren. Yeah. Absolutely. Who you know, we know. So we were there. And Kelly and I were on a panel with Josh Patterson with his Rethinking Faith, as well as Tim Gallagher with
Tim Whitaker.
Thank you. With his work with the New Evangelicals.
New Evangelicals. Yep. Yeah.
And so Tripp was the one that was interviewing us, and he asked a question: did we think as podcasters that what we do is spiritual communities? And I thought, like, oh my God, I have never thought about that question. Maybe I'm the only one that's sitting at this table, but
I hadn't thought about it either. I said, well, you know, we're not reaching, you know, 70,000 people like you are, you know, say if we've only got like 1,000 people listening. And he's like, well, that's a pretty big church.
Yeah, that would be a very big church.
Like, oh,
yeah. Yeah, that was kind of like a poke. And I thought, wow, we actually do that. And it was very humbling. I'm glad that moment happened. So, but it's also cool to hear that you knew all along that you had, a ministry here. And I think maybe I was also a little skittish using the word ministry because I was like, oh, sounds very churchy. So,
yeah, I mean, it certainly it's much larger than people realize. And, you know, think of the average churchgoer, whether they're a progressive Christian person or an evangelical or whatever, but the average church person goes to a church. They might do some singing and whatnot, but then for the most part, they're going there to hear somebody talk for a little while, right? And what are we doing but just talking for a little while, right? And people are listening to us talk for a little while, right? So it's not all that dissimilar. You know, there just might be a few less bridges and choruses being played.
True, but that's what you specialize in as well. I was listening to one of your episodes in particular where you had a guest jazz group on. It was really awesome. I'm like, oh, that's a cool idea. So you actually do weave in some music with your work. So it's like, right on.
Yeah, I used to do like kind of these like smaller artists and whatnot. I haven't really been doing that as much lately with my theology podcast, but I do have a music podcast. So, you know, I'm able to at least still engage the arts in that way.
Right on.
That's right. That's right. And I know that you're still a Reliant K fan.
Number one fan right here. You're looking right at him.
That's right. I think I saw a tweet that was like, are you even Christian if you don't know Reliant K?
I mean, truly, if you do not know the Sadie Hawkins dance, you are absolutely your name is not in the book of life.
I'm a few years older, so I will admit that even though I'm like liberal, progressive, Episcopalian, I still listen to the Newsboys. You know, that's kind of
the Michael Tate iteration of the Newsboys, or no, Peter Fuller,
the Furler version, definitely. So
my parents, one of their first Jesus dates was at a Newsboys concert.
Oh, that's, I love that. I love that.
So Christianity is literally in my DNA. My parents basically, you know, one of their first dates was a Newsboys concert. Like, it was predestined for me to, you know, grow up evangelical. And it doesn't get much more Christian than that. I think there's a comedian named Nate Bargatze, and I was just watching one of his specials recently, and he said something about, you know, growing up in the 80s and 90s with Christians was like the most Christian you could be. You know, he was like, my parents were 80s and 90s Christian, the most Christian that there is of Christianity. He was like, I think Jesus had more fun than me. So I really do feel that, you know, growing up in the late 90s, early 2000s, I'm like, I don't know if it could have gotten more Christian than that.
Yeah, it was very, very saturated. I grew up in Indiana, and, you know, I remember seeing all that. One thing that, you know, we were just talking about online communities and comparing them to churches. And one thing that you don't often get in church is, as the pastor's giving a sermon, people standing up in the congregation and going, you are wrong. It's actually like this. You need to go back to reading John Piper again or whatever. I really admire your ability to handle the hecklers in your feed, because I see that you get a lot of pushback, let's say.
there are thousands of Christian men in my replies all the time, just waiting berate me. It's a very common part of life at this point.
Yep.
Wow. How do you handle that? Like, I know that I feel like my ego is just not strong enough to withstand some of that pressure or the temptation to want to engage and be like, no, I'm really,
that's right.
Yeah. Well, honestly, a lot of people think, you know, from their own perspective of like, I just couldn't do that. You know, I get that a lot from folks. It's like, I just couldn't deal with what you deal with on a daily basis. And that's probably true. That's probably is true. But for me, honestly, I just do not give them any time or energy. You know, the 5 seconds it takes for me to come up with a tweet and tweet it right back at them or whatever, that's truly all the energy that I give to them. You know, sometimes some of these guys will reply and be like, don't you remember what I said last week or whatever? And I'm like, I truly have no idea. Like, other than your like profile picture, I truly have no idea who you are. I would not remember you. You know, I truly don't remember much of it, because that's how little of energy that I give to it. For me, it's just like truly humorous. If there is nobody that will ever see some of my silly replies to these people, because they're buried in a thread, I still enjoy it because it's funny to me in that moment. You know, for the five seconds that I think of the tweet or whatever, it's truly funny to me in that moment. And so, yeah, that is why I think I'm able to handle it, is because I truly give them no actual sincere energy to it.
Mm. Do any of those tweets, are those available on your t-shirts? Any of those famous
you sir, if you like any of them, you can put them on a t-shirt if you like. Like about a year ago, people started reaching out to me and were like, you know, if you put this like on a mug or a sticker or a t-shirt or whatever, I would gladly adorn this. And I was like, let's do it. We'll make this as simple as possible. So yeah, if you find any tweet that you like of mine, you can absolutely put it on a t-shirt. You can go to my website and make it happen.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I
totally do.
I'm just going to start shopping.
That's great. So you bring up a good point about energy because, you know, Kelly and I don't know if we get quite the same heat as you do, at least that we're aware of, except for our families occasionally, right? But I
love you guys.
We do love our family. It's not about a debate, but unfortunately, as we were talking a little while ago, Mason, it feels very binary, and it feels like you always have to be squared off in the corners every single time about this. So it's like, God, can't we just do this like where there's a third way where we can, you know, and it's so easy to say, you know, to find respect and, you know, where we can find common ground. But it's more than that because, you know, one of your YouTube clips, you talk about the 45,000 denominations. I'm like, yes, there are a shitload of denominations, Christian denominations out there. And I think where you're going with that, and that's where I like Kelly and I to go as well, is like, look, it's everybody's individual perspectives. Nobody can believe this exactly the same. But boy, we just don't live in a time right now where that is okay. It's like, well, you have to, you're either in or you're out. So it seems. So what's your thoughts on that, my friend?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to the diversity of Christianity, I think not only is it a reality, but I think it's actually good. I think it's good that we can recognize that there are so many different ways to understand this person named Jesus of Nazareth. And there's so many different ways that he's been thought about, right? I mean, at the very beginning, we have four gospel accounts, and each of those gospel accounts has a little bit different way of they think about Jesus, right?
That's
so
correct.
It's already baked in within our scriptures that there is going to be different ways to think about this, about Jesus, about God, about salvation. It's already baked in. And so, you know, it should be no surprise that there is this much diversity in Christianity. But again, I think it's not an exception to Christianity, this diversity. It's baked in. It's part of its DNA. And so I think it's really important to not only recognize that, but also to embrace the fact that there are going to be lots of different ways to think about this this Christian faith.
Which makes sense if you start to study Christian history. And that it was a big surprise from issue. It was a bigger surprise than it should have been.
Right.
When I started studying theology and studied the history of theology and looked back over how many different ways people interpreted everything, every different ways of looking at salvation, different ways of looking at even what faith meant, what were we supposed to do? And, different ways of looking at what the kingdom of God meant. And
Is Jesus actually the Son of God, or is he a part of the Trinity?
Right, right. Even the Trinity itself, I remember figuring out like how they got to thinking about the Trinity, but just all the different ways it went and all the ways it could have gone, like heresies along the way where somebody was like, we're not going to.
Didn't win out. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was just looking at all these different threads and seeing that the tradition that I had grown up in was, you know, like 80 years old. I was like, oh, maybe I need to expand my view here a little bit.
Right. Yeah. I grew up thinking that, you know, there was the early church, then there was 1200 years where the church got it wrong. And then Martin Luther corrected it. And then, then like 300 years after that, we get Billy Graham. And that's all that church history is. And right. when I actually went to college and started learning about church history and all the diversity that there is and how it's so much more than the simple picture that I had been given growing up, I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much rich history here. And I want to kind of piece together the things that I find really life-giving and wonderful a part of this tradition.
Right. Right.
I love that idea because, you know, I'm a fan of history. And I've said this all along. Kelly has heard me say this 1,000 times over when we've talked about what we do at Radical Love Live. But, and I've always thought, wouldn't it be great to just talk about the history of our faith? Like, just paint it out there. Because, you know, as we were talking about, we all know Jonathan Tamminell. And mm-hmm. I have one memory of when he was with us on a live event back in 2020, where he said, one's atheism is only as good as one's theism. You know, the flip that around, that's saying, in other words, if you learned crappy theism, then you're going to be a crappy atheist. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, because they're, by and large, people who are Christian are probably not that great. And I don't mean that in a demeaning way. It's just that their level of intelligence about the faith and understanding all of these elements and the nuance and the history and everything else, like, I am a much better Christian because of everything that I've done, including, you know, the time that I was a very angry atheist for about 20 some years and the reclamation of my faith and everything else. I've done a lot of hard work, but that makes me I am a well-educated Christian now.
Mm-hmm.
And my faith is very deep because of that. But
right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of folks don't get there. And yeah. I'm wondering, do you see the same from your point of view, Mason?
Yeah, one of the things that's most frustrating to me that I hear from people on Twitter, you know, other kind of evangelical, conservative, fundamentalist type of Christians, one of the things that's most frustrating is that the very thing that you were talking about how you learned the diversity of Christianity, you learned about the Bible, all these different things, you didn't do that out of wanting to try to figure out why Christianity might be wrong or whatever, right? You did it because you wanted to take your faith seriously. So mm-hmm. it's those of us who took our faith as seriously as possible, where we wanted to actually learn more about our faith. We wanted to learn more about the Bible. And that's why many of us ended up getting to the point where it's like, oh wait, that brings about bigger questions. If that thing about the Bible is actually like this, then what kind of other questions might I need to ask? And so it was that actual taking of my faith seriously what led me to start having some of these doubts and questions about my faith, even greater doubts and greater questions, richer questions, richer doubts. And so it's really frustrating when I hear from folks that, you know, no, it's, you know, the people that left evangelicalism or whatever are people that didn't take their faith all that seriously, and that's why they left. No, it's actually because we took our faith seriously is why we ended up maybe leaving a particular kind of Christianity.
Right, right. Mm. That's a, was wow. it? Yeah. I'm trying to remember who it was who coined the phrase.
Ex-evangelical?
I take the Bible too seriously to take it literally.
Yeah.
I think it's been attributed to Rachel Held Evans, but I think it might predate her. But, you know, realizing that even just like that the Bible is written in a number of different genres, mm-hmm. it's written by languages, different people at different times, mm-hmm. in different places for different reasons.
Mm-hmm. It was our ancestors that wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just look at it from that kind of context, because context is so important, I know you reference context as well, Mason, like how can you look at the Bible without context, knowing that there's so much to it? And again, that's our ancestors. And that's one reason why I love it, because it's a history lesson inside of all that and how they saw their world at that time. So,
but one of the things I do want to make sure that we make time to talk about is,
go for it,
a word that has been, or a phrase that's been coming up a lot in some of our conversations lately is process theology.
Yeah. Yep.
And I know it's not something that is easy to define in 15 minutes, but wanted to at least give a little glimpse for our listeners who, you know, who may have been hearing about this term as to what process theology is, or, you know, just like a kind of an introduction into where it starts to lead.
Yeah. Well, if you're already talking with people like Thetominal or Trip Fowler or Tom Ord, you know, those are the people that really know process theology. You're basically getting the diet off-brand version here, but I'll give my best attempt. So
go for it.
I often define process theology by two different things. So this is kind of my elevator speech of process theology. The first thing that process theology focuses on is that everything is in relationship with each other. So whether it's the electrons that make up everything in the universe, those electrons have relationship, some form of relationship with each other.
They do.
Might be very, very, very simple relationship, but they have relationship nonetheless. Or it might be something as great as God and the world having relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So everything as small can get is in relationship, and everything as big can get is in relationship. So mm-hmm. that's the first thing about process theology that's important to know. The second thing is that the future is open to all sorts of different kinds of possibilities. So for a lot of us that might have grown up more in the Calvinist tradition, we think of God as predestining everything that's going to happen. So everything that's happening in history is already something that God knew was going to happen in history, and God mm-hmm. has already predetermined to happen in history. And mm-hmm. so many of us kind of grew up with thinking about the world and the future like that. Whereas process theology thinks that the future is open to all sorts of different kinds of possibilities. The future has not been set. In fact, God doesn't necessarily know what's going to happen in the future even. And so the future is open to all sorts of different kinds of possibilities, and everything is in relationship with each other. So that's kind of the two main pieces to process theology.
I love your definition.
Yeah, I wish that second part in particular, I wish I had known when I was a younger person, just first starting to explore and ask questions. Because, you know, I think about original sin, and that, you know, the doctrine of original sin, and the story of Adam and Eve, which I believe is a symbolic story, but still the idea of humans did something that then changed their nature or whatever. And if you look at it from a standpoint of God knows everything is going to happen, you know, everything that's going to happen, and, you know, and perhaps even predestined something, you look at the story of the Garden of Eden, go, that's a setup. Like, that was a total setup. Like, how did, you know, God knew this was going to happen. And now,
so why did he have that happen?
Like, why did he create a problem that right. he then had to fix to, yeah. in order to?
Because he was bored one day and decided, hey, let's see what happens when I do this.
Yeah. But if he knew it was going to happen, like, here, I'm going to put this little candy out here, and I know you're going to eat it.
He's feeling a little funky, a little offbeat that day. He wanted to try something.
But, you know, whether that story is, you know, mythological, legendary, whatever, approaching it with the idea of anything was possible is a whole different, you know, it opens up a little bit, and it you know, it makes God more of kind of like an open-minded, creative partner in making this world than this kind of like puppet master who's just kind of messing with us.
Yeah, it gives me a lot of hope to know that all sorts of different kinds of things are possible in the future. You know, we think of all the things that are going on in the world right now. There's war, there's depression, there's poverty, there's all these issues that are going on in the world right now, right? And it gives me hope that there is a possibility for a world to be completely different than all of those things, right? There's a world that's possible where there is no more war, there is no more depression, there is no more poverty. There is a possibility for that to happen. And so, and we're here in the world to create that possibility, right? And so that gives me a lot of hope that the world is open to all sorts of different kinds of possibilities, and that it's not just predetermined that it's going to be like this, and we just kind of have to live through it, and we can't do anything about it. That doesn't give me any hope. But what does give me hope is the fact that a different world is possible.
Yeah, that was so well said, Mason, because if you think about, you know, in especially your context, I am not a part of an evangelical upbringing, so I'm not familiar, can't speak to it very well. But if you live in that world of absolute, you know, finiteness, right, that this is the way things are going to be, that's very depressing, actually, right? I mean, you're always like, oh my God, like, this is like, you're always trying to like make sure that you don't fall out, so you don't live this horrible fate of eternity and everything else. Whereas when you look at it a relationship that the source has with us, and that, you know, it's being created as we go along. That's hope, as you just said. I love that idea. Like, yes, you know, it's co-creation that's taking place all the time, continually, this conversation we have and what goes on throughout the world, and that we can actually make it beyond all of this and the current circumstances. So beautifully said.
And now one of the transformational teachings that that was huge for me, and this was in college when I was taking like my secret theology program behind my theater degree, was the kingdom of God, was reading the gospels and realizing that there's very little in the gospels themselves that is about, or at least in the synoptics, that is about what we think of in evangelical terms as salvation. There's this whole idea of the kingdom of God, which I had grown up just kind of assuming, well, the kingdom of God is heaven, and heaven is this faraway place, and I'll go there when I die or get raptured. And in the meantime, we're on this like rotten, terrible, fallen earth, and our only job is to like hunker down and wait for the rapture, or maybe go make sure that our neighbors know about Jesus too, so that they can hunker down and wait for the rapture. And the whole idea of there's this thing called the kingdom, this like reign of God that has, that's already started, like the fuse is already lit, and like we're here in it and co-creating it. It was just mind blowing. Yeah. This is such a different way of looking at things, but it's all right there. It's all right there in the scripture.
Yes, it is. That's the crazy part, but yes.
Yeah. And if we have this idea of, you know, that the world is something to be escaped from, that it's so bad that we need to escape it, whether it's through the rapture or eventually we die and then we go to heaven in a different place, right? If you have that idea, that's going to form how you think about politics. It's going to inform how you live in the world. Whereas if you think, no, Jesus was bringing the kingdom of God here, it's supposed to be here, salvation happens here, that's going to change completely how you think about politics and the way that you live in the world.
Right, right.
So how did we get it so wrong? Here we are in 2024 going, we don't live in this world at all. And it's always been laid out. Nothing has changed. I mean, there's been different interpretations and revisions of the gospels themselves, of course, over, you know, language and stuff. But the point is the essential message has not changed. But yet, by and large, we don't live that. Is it because of empire? Is it because of institution? Why are we where we are?
Well, I do think one of the things that I'm sort of grateful for, although the way it was articulated wasn't particularly great, but one of the things I was grateful for growing up in evangelicalism was this idea that the world isn't as it should be, right? There is something, there are things going wrong in the world, right? And so the world is certainly not this perfect place. The world is not as it should be. And so I think that plays a really big role in, obviously, the way that we completely twist what I think Jesus was trying to get at, what he was trying to do. And so, you know, I think at the end of the day, we are people that are marked by sin. You know, we do not do things the way God maybe would hope or desire for us to do. And sometimes that also means that over a long period of time, we can really get what Jesus was probably trying to say. We can get that entirely wrong.
Yeah, and I do think you're onto something with that industry and empire kind of benefit from this. I remember not too long ago, I might have already talked about this, but I think it was at CPAC that I think it was Sean Hannity that got up on stage and was saying, well, you know, all the liberals are saying that, you know, because of global warming, the world's only going to last for 10 more years. Well, let's live it up in the meantime, you know, and let's, you know, take all the restrictions off the oil companies and make as much money as we can. And,
burn it to the ground.
And if, you know, and that thinking then gets into ideas about salvation, and it's transactional as well. Like, as long as I, you know, exchange this, you know, as long as I do put my belief in the, you know, in the jar, then I get into heaven. It just all is really weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it completely changes, you know, the way that we live in the world. And, you know, I still remember being, I was probably like in maybe third or fourth grade, and we were kind of at the height of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, it was kind of towards the end of George Bush's presidency. And I still remember hearing the one of the leaders at my church talking about how grateful she was that there were so many wars going on right now, because it meant that it was the sign of the end times, that Jesus was going to be coming back. So all these wars meant that, you know, Jesus is going to be coming back soon and we need to be ready. And of course, that's going to shape the way that you live in the world. It's going to shape the way you vote. It's going to completely shape everything if you think that Jesus is just ready to come back when things are going to get worse. You're going to try to make things worse if that's what your hope, you know, if that's how you think about Jesus and when he's going to come.
Totally.
Oh my gosh, yes. So in the few minutes we have left, you know, what a fascinating conversation. I think Kelly and I could talk to you for hours about this stuff. It's so fascinating, the work you're doing and putting out there in the world. You obviously are very hopeful about what you, how you see your faith, what you see in Christ. And this is carrying out through your podcast. What else are you working on, though, that they get your word out and your perspective? What else are you doing?
Yeah, so obviously, you mentioned a little bit about my YouTube stuff. I'm really trying to get more consistent on making YouTube videos, and I'm really proud of the videos I make. You know, I know it's not probably the thing that people know me most for, but I really do think my YouTube videos are some of the best stuff that I make, and so highly recommend checking out my YouTube videos. They are not like hours long kind of videos. They are literally like maybe 10 minutes, and they're full of jokes, and hopefully you might learn a thing or two from them. But I really like my YouTube stuff. So yeah, if that's something that you might be interested in, definitely check that out. And then obviously I'm very active on social media. So Twitter, Instagram, trying to think of all the other kind of social medias, but yeah, very active on Twitter and Instagram. And so yeah, say hi.
That's right. You show up at some conferences and
yeah, stuff, do that stuff. Too.
Yep. I think it was for the OrCon, I think I saw.
Yeah, I'll be at OrCon in Wyoming this year. So I will be there in a few months in July. I'm super stoked about that. I actually was just editing a podcast yesterday where I was doing a live event at the Q Christian Fellowship Conference. And so, and then I'll be at Theology Beer Camp with Trip Fuller again. So yeah, I'm at doing the little conference.
Sweet. We'll see you there.
We'll see you there.
We'll be there. Lovely. Too. Yep. We'll grab a beer and hang out.
And look forward to it. I can't wait to meet you face to face. I love the work that you're doing. You are making a difference, and it's good to know that you're out there in this world. And I just personally will attest, go check out Mason's YouTube. I love the 45,000 denominations because it's funny, it's witty, and it's a bit irreverent. So
yeah, but they're short, they're accessible, but they're informative. Mason knows his stuff. So yeah. Mason, thank you so much. We had really enjoyed talking with you today, and we will see you soon.
Yeah, we'll see you in October. Look forward to it.
Look forward to it. All right, all the best, Mason.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Radical Love Live, co-hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson. All rights reserved. You can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, and other popular podcast platforms. Go to RadicalLoveLive.com to learn more about us, watch recordings of our live events, and listen to our podcast. We also invite you to check out what Kelly and Mark are doing by going to our websites. Find Kelly at KellyWilson.com and Mark at MarkDilcom.com. This is Radical Love Live, where we explore faith outside the boxes.